This episode of the Debatables podcast is brought to you by GlassesUSA.com. On a mission to change the way consumers purchase glasses, GlassesUSA.com was created on one simple belief: eyewear shouldn't break the bank. The smart way to buy glasses, GlassesUSA.com allows consumers to purchase eyewear from the convenience of their homes, offering a wide variety of high-quality frames and lenses at an affordable price with absolutely no risk. They offer quality prescription glasses online at affordable prices that save the customer up to 70% off retail prices. Yes, you, the customer, 70% off retail prices. A complete pair of glasses, frames, and lenses included, start at just $48. Using the promo code Almighty, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y, at checkout, you will receive a special promotion from GlassesUSA.com for listening. Free prescription lenses are included with every frame. So head to GlassesUSA.com. There you have a wide variety of selection, over 2,500 styles, from in-house brands like Muse and Amelia E to designer brands like Ray-Ban and Oakley. Any type of glasses you are looking for or need, GlassesUSA.com is there. Remember to use the promo code Almighty at checkout, and you'll receive an exclusive offer only good enough for our listeners.
Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. And we don't run away from it. We accept it.
Guess what the story is now? Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Ain't nobody think about no Dan LeVar.
Yes, they are. Look at you.
Jimmy starts to drive, step back in the air.
Oh, heavy step back and kiss myself. Big time plays, big time plays. Woo!
Butler.
Hashtag free Bobby Portis.
Welcome into the Debatables podcast, brought to you by the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. My name is Jordan Malley, and I'm the host of the Debatables podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Steiner Sports Memorabilia. Steiner Sports is the leading producer of authentic sports memorabilia and hand-signed collectibles. From game-used jerseys to autographed pictures and so much more, whether you're looking to add something to your man cave or simply want to continue your collection, Steiner Sports has you covered. When listeners use the promo code ALMIGHTY at checkout, you'll receive 20% discounts on all your purchases. Steiner Sports, leading producer in authentic sports memorabilia. SteinerSports.com. All right, so this has been a few weeks since we've done the last podcast. It's been an up and down March for the Bulls. So I brought on somebody that I thought, and this is sort of perfect timing. We planned this out actually before the Derrick Rose injury happened. We've got a huge Derrick Rose fan on. But our guest today is Rajon Johnson. He's content creator and writer for Bulls on Parade, at Shy Bulls Life on Twitter, BullsNation.net, at BullsNation.net. You can follow him at Ray Johnson NBA on Twitter. Rajon, how are you today?
I'm great. Not feeling the best since the Derrick Rose news, but I mean, it happens every now and then, so you know, I'm kind of used to it by now.
It is kind of weird to say that about a player. It's like it's almost like we had to expect it at some point with the way Derrick Rose's careers went. We'll get into that part of the podcast in a little bit, but I want to start with the Pelicans win. So right now, as we're recording, this was right after the Pelicans, the fourth game in the winning streak for the Bulls against the Pelicans, 117-110 in New Orleans. The Bulls got five games left. Right now, they sit seventh in the Eastern Conference. They're a half game up against the Heat. What do you make of this four-game winning streak as far as watching the Bulls and seeing what they've done over this stretch, where at the beginning of March we were talking about possibly not even making the playoffs, and now it looks like without a doubt, with some kind of huge collapse, the Bulls are looking like a playoff team?
I mean, I think the Bulls have finally found a really stable lineup now. Before, the Bulls, they kept experimenting with their lineups. There was really never a clear sort of point guard of who they had to lead the team. And I think that's where they struggled, as if their team just wasn't, you know, working well as a unit. But then finally, Hoiberg, after experimenting for quite a lot of time, they found their point guard in Rondo, and Rondo has really stepped up ever since Wade's injury. Because before, I think a couple months ago, the Bulls had that whole drama thing, and it made Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade seem like they had their own pact together, and it really separated them from the team. And Rondo kind of spoke out about it, and now that Wade is out, it seems that Rondo's really been picking up his slack. back and really just been bringing the team together. I think before the Pelican game, he's been shooting 51% from the three-point line last month. So that's really good. He's been putting up pretty good numbers. And Jimmy Butler, man, he's been single-handedly just torching teams left and right, man. He's been, I think he hasn't missed a go-ahead shot in four games. Yeah, I think it's four games that he hasn't missed a go-ahead shot
against the Hawks. I think it's interesting if you talk about after Dwayne Wade got injured and he wasn't with the team now for the rest of the season, you kind of saw a spark lit underneath Jimmy Butler. We talked over the past, like between February and the beginning of March, it seemed like Jimmy Butler was kind of having, I don't know, I hate to say slumping. He was slumping a little bit, but it wasn't the Jimmy Butler we saw at the beginning of the season. Do you think Dwayne Wade's injury, I mean, looking at this four-game winning streak and kind of the Bulls figuring out what they're doing, was this kind of a blessing in disguise in Wade not being there? Obviously, Wade's still a very productive player and the Bulls could use him, but this is, it's kind of weird that they weren't winning on the when he was on the floor and now he gets taken off the floor with an injury and all of a sudden this looks like a completely new Bulls team.
I mean, it's the same result of last year when you took Derrick Rose off the floor. Jimmy Butler would always step up and perform in basically all-star level. And I mean, with Wade off the floor as well, it's up to Jimmy Butler to try to carry his team into the playoffs. And I think with the roster the Bulls have now with Rajon Rondo and Denzel Valentine and guys like Paul Zipser and Nikola Mirotic finally stepping up, I think Jimmy Butler is just having the ball in his hands more and more freedom to create better offense. And I think Hoiberg kind of understands that as well and is kind of allowing Jimmy to take over the game. And I think if they just keep letting Jimmy Butler create the offense and instead of relying on just Dwayne Wade, how is it going to work out with Rajon Rondo and Jimmy Butler and the spacing issues? I think if Jimmy Butler just has control of that offense, I think the Bulls operate much better as a unit.
What's been the one thing that you've been most excited about this team over this past winning streak, maybe going into the playoffs, maybe a type of player, the way the Bulls are playing offensively or defensively? What's been the most exciting thing for you, at least?
Honestly, it's been the future of the Bulls I've been taking a look at. I mean, Denzel Valentine, I think last night he had a pretty solid night with 13 points, shooting 45%. And I think of him as like a future player for the Chicago Bulls, because obviously with Jimmy Butler, he's pretty much in his prime right now. But with the Bulls, where they at right now, they don't seem to be going anywhere. I mean, they might make it to, well, they will make it to the playoffs. I can guarantee that. And they'll probably match up against the Cavs. I'm not sure how far they'll go with that. But I think the Bulls' future is in Denzel Valentine and guys like Paul Zipser. I think Nikola Mirotic is more of a movable piece, but he is showing some consistency now. So I think for trade value, I think that's great for the Chicago Bulls as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you brought up Nikola Mirotic, and it seems like every March or any time it's getting towards the end of the season, we see finally a consistent Mirotic. This is going on two seasons now. Like last year, he had an incredible March, and now it seems like he's duplicated that kind of performance. And with him being a restricted free agent this year, is he going to be a leverage piece for the Bulls, or is he going to be a guy that the Bulls invest in? I know that the front office has talked highly of him. They think he can still be the guy that they thought he was in 2011, 2012 when they picked him and have held out from trading him. Is there still value in him? Because it frustrates me because I feel like fans forget about what he's done in the 4 months prior up until this last stretch of games where he's actually knocking down threes, actually playing somewhat worthy defense. Is this a guy the Bulls are going to move on from or keep around? Is it worth for them to keep him around? Because I'm not even sure what kind of money he would be offered in free agency, whether teams want to take a chance on him. And with the salary cap going up, he's going to get paid good money.
Yeah, I agree. Nikola Mirotic, he shows potential 1 month and the nether month, he's just classic Nico, which is basically really sluggish defense and just inconsistency from the three. And with Nikola Mirotic, he's really that guy that you want to bring off the bench and have him just light it up from the three-point line. And with him not doing that, I don't think he's good on the Bulls. But lately, he has been, I'll say, stepping up his game. But I don't feel that as a long-term player, Nikola Mirotic would belong on the Bulls. I think he's great right now, and I think the way he's been playing is great. But I think his trade value is what matters the most right now, because I believe the Bulls should focus on their future. But I know the Bulls don't have really a clear direction of where they want to go. I'm not sure if they have any idea of where they want to go in the future. And Nikola Mirotic definitely will be that deciding piece onto whether the Bulls have a better chance of a playoff team that could be a contender in the future, or if the Bulls could just be, you know, still mediocre with inconsistencies. I do believe that Nikola Mirotic could be that guy. I just believe that he won't be that guy for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, and it's I'm a guy that I'm sort of tired of watching him play. Like, when he plays good over the course of the last 4, 5, 6 games like he has, that's fine, but the inconsistency just kills me. And having him on the floor when he's just getting burned past and destroyed on defense, I mean, that's part of, I mean, in essence, it's part of the reason why the Bulls traded McDermott, is because he was an awful defender. And McDermott's arguably a better shooter than Nikola is, and yet maybe Nikola Mirotic has some more attributes that are better than McDermott at this point, or maybe if the Bulls, our front office believes, are better. To me, I would hope the Bulls, like you said, trade him and get something. They talked about getting younger, more athletic. They talk about wanting to build for the future, sustaining the future. And I don't see Nikola Mirotic fitting in what the Bulls are trying to do, but that's just me. And it sounds like the same to you. Talking about the Eastern Conference playoffs, so we've got 5 games left with the Bulls. The Bulls arguably have the easiest road to finish out the regular season among the teams that they're fighting for a playoff spot. You got the Bucks, who are 2 games ahead of the Bulls. They sit in the 5th spot, so the Bulls could be anywhere from the 5th to the 8th seed, depending how the last 5 or 6 games here play out. Who do you think the opponent would be the best for the Bulls to match up against? Who should the Bulls want to play? Because you got the Wizards in the 4 seed, the Raptors in the 3 seed, Cavaliers in the 2 seed, and the Celtics in the 1 seed right now. That Celtics Cavaliers at the top of the division could change this week. What's the best matchup for the Bulls moving forward into the playoffs?
Well, in the playoffs, I think the best matchup for the Bulls would probably be either the Toronto Raptors or the Cleveland Cavaliers. And just because the Toronto Raptors, I believe the Bulls just have them figured out, just offensively and defensively. Even though they did lose against them on Huskies night, I think the Bulls do have them figured out. And with Dwayne Wade back in playoffs, or he should be back, and with Kyle Lowry coming back as well, I believe that DeMar DeRozan will slow down a little bit with Kyle Lowry coming back. And just Jimmy Butler just can really take over against the Raptors. I don't think the Raptors still have the Bulls figured out yet. They still struggle against the Bulls. And the Bulls, before they lost, had a good, almost a 20-point lead. I think it was a 16-point lead at one point. And then they just blew it off because they obviously went in their shooting slump. And the Raptors came back with DeMar DeRozan. But now with Kyle Lowry and them returning to their usual offense, I think that the Bulls could easily push past the Raptors in the playoffs. I would say maybe about 6 games, but I don't think the Raptors have figured out the Bulls enough to move past them. As for the Cavaliers, I think the Bulls, I think they sweep them this season, but I don't believe the Bulls can actually take them off in the playoffs. I think the Bulls could get a good 2 or 3 games from the Cavs, but obviously, I mean, the Cavs are more built for the playoffs than the Bulls. And you can't just have Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo and a bad core of shooters to take out the Cavaliers. But I believe that one of their best chances of advancing in the playoffs is matching up with one of those 2 teams, because the Bulls seem to have those teams kind of figured out.
It's funny you brought up the Cavaliers, and I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this Bulls team sweeping the Cavaliers series 4-0 this season. I think that's the first time a team has done that against a LeBron team since he's been in the NBA, which is pretty impressive. But we see every year we talk about the same thing in Chicago, where even going back to the Derrick Rose era, the Tom Thibodeau era with them making the playoffs, it was every single year, you know, maybe this is the year that the Bulls can finally get past the Cavaliers, and every year it's heartbreak. So, like you said, I'm even with the Cavs stumbling over the course of the last 3-4 weeks, defensively especially, I still think there's that switch, that hidden switch that they're going to turn on in the playoffs. It's going to be an extra boost, and people are still, they have this conversation in March every year among Cavs Twitter, among Cavs fans, that, you know, maybe this is the year that the Cavs don't do it, or they've got problems going on. But I still think there's a switch to be hit, and if the Bulls run into them, it's not going to be pretty. I agree with you. I think among the teams that are sit at the top there, the Raptors, it makes sense. Barring that fourth quarter the Bulls had on the 21st of March against the Raptors, where they let them score 34 points in the fourth, and they had, I believe, a 14 or 16 point lead going into that quarter. If they hadn't blown that lead in the fourth quarter, they would have still been undefeated against the Raptors, and the last time they won was in 2014. DeMar DeRozan getting Kyle Lowry back is going to probably be a big factor for the Raptors, especially the impact he can have. And same with Dwayne Wade coming back if he's able to play in that first round. I think it'd be interesting to see them play the Raptors, but that's getting them into the seventh seed. So among the teams that are still left in the Eastern Conference fighting for a playoff spot, what's the team that right now you feel like is probably not going to make the playoffs? Who's got the easiest push? Who's got the hardest push to try and make a playoff spot?
For the teams, I mean, that will probably not make the playoffs, I don't believe the Pistons or the Hornets. The Hornets still have a chance, but I just don't believe that they have enough to push into the playoffs. The Pacers, they don't have the easiest schedule, but the Pacers, there's a chance if Paul George can keep up his consistency. He's been playing really good lately, but I just don't feel that with the Pacers. I think Miles Turner has been struggling recently, and I don't feel that the Pacers could push to make that eighth seed. I think that Miami will probably end up keeping the eighth seed, just the way Eric Spoelstra has been coaching the team lately. He's been phenomenal. And I think Dion Waiters, when he comes back, will make a great impact on the Heat in the playoffs as well. And we could possibly be seeing one of the sleepers in the East.
I think with the Pacers, it's interesting. They lost to the Cavaliers in a pretty much in a must-win game for them. They really needed this one. They lost in overtime to the Cavaliers on the road. As far as the Bulls, with their drafting into, obviously they're going to make the playoffs, sitting at the 8th seed. If you're already going to make the playoffs, seeing an 8-7-6 seed is nice, but moving on in the playoffs for the Bulls doesn't seem like a huge possibility. I mean, this win streak that they've had over the last four games is kind of an outlier from what we've seen the entire season. It's the consistency that's going to be there with this team. And I feel like it's going to be heavily reliant on Jimmy Butler. And I feel like a lot of other fans can feel that same way. As far as the outlook on this team moving forward, if you're a Bulls fan, should you be excited for playoff basketball? Should you be pissed off that they made the playoffs and now they're going to be sitting somewhere in the lower half of the draft in the first round after being sold some lies about how they're trying to transition into a younger, more athletic team? Where should Bulls fans be sitting at right now, on either side of the spectrum or a little bit in both?
Well, I think they should be a little bit of both. I mean, the goal of signing Dwayne Wade and getting Rajon Rondo the whole time was to still be a contender. They're not going to be the third or the second best team in the East, but they're still going to be a somewhat decent team. They've been mediocre for a while now, but the Bulls haven't had a clear direction of where their future is. Signing veterans and surrounding Jimmy again with bad shooters isn't exactly the greatest way to, you know, build around Jimmy. But like the Bulls said, they don't want to build around Jimmy. They want to build with Jimmy. I'm not sure exactly what that means. It's basically saying that anytime Jimmy could come and Jimmy could go. But the Bulls fans should be pretty happy that at least we have somewhat of a decent team. It will probably be one of the better seasons in the future for the Bulls, considering in the offseason, who knows if Dwayne Wade is staying or going. But there is, again, no clear direction of where the Bulls are going in the future, and saying they're going to sign younger and athletic has proved nothing since The Bulls have basically got what, Michael Carter Williams, who hasn't shown his potential in being Rookie of the Year again. They got Dwayne Wade, who's injured now, and he's coming back to probably average around 15 to 18 points in the playoffs. I don't see big numbers out of Dwayne Wade, and he's probably going to leave next season. And that could affect Jimmy Butler's decision on his relationship with the Chicago Bulls. So I think Bulls fans should be a little happy that we're getting to see something positive from the Bulls now, because in the future, based on the Bulls' direction and where they're taking things, I doubt that we'll be seeing a lot of good from the Chicago Bulls for a while.
Interesting. So the last, this kind of transitions to the next thing I wanted to talk about. And last time the Bulls have been in the playoffs was a Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah ridden team. And now we found out on Sunday that Derrick Rose has torn his meniscus once again. Is this the, you being a Derrick Rose fan, obviously since he started in Chicago, I'm assuming you probably followed him back into Memphis, maybe even in his high school days with Simeon. Is this the end for Derrick Rose, and or is he going to try to make some another comeback like he's done already so many times in his career? Or is it a real possibility that he could consider retirement?
Absolutely not. It is absolutely not the end for
Derrick
Rose.
Zero chance?
There is zero chance that this is the end for Derrick Rose. And I can assure you he's just going to come back better and stronger from this injury. Now, I know that's been said quite a lot from his first injury, but Derrick Rose is not going to quit anytime soon. The injury is going to do nothing but give him a little setback. But in the offseason, he's just going to work twice as hard just to get back to where he was and continue performing on another team. I doubt the Knicks are going to re-sign him. I feel that Derrick Rose would be much better somewhere else. And I feel that since he doesn't care about the money, as he said, he wants to win. I feel that maybe he could take a pay cut and sign somewhere like the San Antonio Spurs, where they could rest Derrick Rose as they do with most of their players and give Rose that rest that he needs to perform really good each game throughout. And I feel that Rose isn't done. Like, a lot of people believe, you know, after he's tearing his ACL and his meniscus so much that, you know, Rose is just going to slow down and become another Tracy McGrady or a Grant Hill or something. But that's not Derrick Rose, you know. He's just going to keep balling out and performing. He's been doing better. He's been showing that he could stay healthy. And he's shown it last season on the Chicago Bulls that he could stay healthy towards the end. And he showed it on the Knicks now that he's been pretty healthy and he's played, what, like 67, somewhere around there, games. And
he actually just went over the limit of games. I made a bet before this season with one of my buddies, and I believe he played 63 games with the Bulls last season. And I said there's no way he played 63 more than 63 games this season. And if he played 67, well, then I guess I just lost a bet. Derrick Rose, so you said there's no possible chance for retirement. Okay, I understand that. You said that he doesn't care about the money, that he would rather win than make the money, but he talked about 2 months ago how he feels like he's still a max contract player.
Derrick Rose is seeking 5 years, $150 million. Remember Derrick Rose was talking about 2 years ago, talking about all that money that they're passing out?
Maybe that's just me being ignorant to what he was trying to say and realizing that every NBA player wants to be a max contract guy. That's going to be the highest that they're shooting for. But Derrick Rose is no longer a max contract guy. I would hope that he understands that he's no longer a max contract player. If he wants to win, you brought up the Spurs too. I think that'd be a great fit for him. The way he talked about in Chicago, the opportunities that he had after playing with the team and re-signing contracts and sort of the business model that he set out for himself as a player. Do you feel like after these injuries, especially this injury now that he suffered, do you feel like his plans as far as a player have gone are kind of shifting now, where he'll understand a role of maybe being a guy coming off the bench, only playing 20, 25 minutes a night? Because to me, I feel like Rose as a player is no longer a 36, 30, 36 minute guy. And I felt like that before this injury. I felt like he wasn't a guy that's going to go out there and give you 36 to 40 minutes a night. Do you think he'd be okay with restructuring his plan as far as an NBA player to kind of extend his longevity in the NBA and ultimately try and win that NBA championship he's been seeking?
Well, Rose is always about trying to prolong his career. He's always trying to make sure that he's healthy and just, you know, withstanding the rest of the season. But with Rose, it's to him, I would really doubt that he would want to come off the bench. I think Rose wants to be that guy for a team as one of the great point guards that led a team to a championship. So as for Rose coming off the bench, I don't think if any team offered him that kind of position that he would accept at all. I just don't think that's within Rose's, options.
With Rose not wanting to come off the bench, doesn't that limit him in the places that he can go to be content for a championship? Because I'm sorry, you're not beating the Warriors, you're not beating the Cavaliers, not beating the Spurs. The Rockets look really good this year. So what team would he go to that he could be that type of player where, I mean, I could think of maybe a handful, maybe 7 to 8 teams that he would be able to start on a team. But if he's actually looking to win with a team as a starter, where do you see that fitting in?
I mean, again, Rose, everybody's saying that, you know, he's a washed player, that he's not as good as he used to be. And of course, Rose isn't going to be in MVP form like he was before, but he's an above average point guard. He's not a terrible point guard like the media tries to play him out to be. He's averaging 18 points, 4 assists, and 4 rebounds. And within the Knicks triangle, there's a lot of confusion as to where their offense is. So, of course, Rose is struggling in New York. And I feel with the right team that Rose could excel just as he did before. Now, as to where he would start on the bet, as a starter, Rose would probably fit in nicely with the Spurs, obviously, because Tony Parker, he's struggling. He's getting older now. He's going scoreless some nights. I feel D Rose cutting to the basket, that pick and roll offense with LaMarcus and everybody. I feel that Rose could fit in right just well with the Spurs. Another place could be Utah, the Pistons, even the Bucks, where Rose could fit in. I mean, you look at a guy like George Hill, who's on the Jazz right now, averaging 17 points, 4 assists, and 3 rebounds. It's almost the exact same numbers as Derrick Rose. So it's not to say that Derrick Rose can't start anymore. He's still as good as a starting point guard, just like George Hill. But it's just, of course, he's going to have to take a big pay cut. And yes, they're going to have to not play him 30 minutes a game. So they're going to need a good backup point guard. But I feel Derrick Rose would be good enough to help a team go to that NBA championship.
So Derrick had a lot of memories with the Chicago Bulls. And I feel like in his last maybe 2 to 3 years while he was with the Bulls, there was this feeling about Rose here that was not necessarily the greatest. And it might have been the way he carried himself. Maybe it was the way people perceived him. Maybe even the way the media projected him in Chicago. As a follower of Derrick Rose and being a fan, how do you feel that he was perceived in Chicago before he left in those last 2 years, maybe even that last year? And now, how is he perceived now that he's not with the team anymore? Do people care about him the same way that they did when he was with the Bulls, or could they really care less at this point? I know the hometown story, the him being from the city, him going to Simeon High School and playing for the Bulls, but I feel like that last year, he got a really bad rap, and I have to admit, I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of giving him the bad rap. Some of the things that he did say in the media, I didn't agree with, but maybe it was a way that the media projected him. So how do you feel? I know you probably have a lot of following, other similar Derrick Rose fans following you on Twitter. What are their feelings like in Chicago, and how do they perceive him, and how did they perceive him before?
Well, first of all, Derrick Rose doesn't say the best things to the media, so just don't mind too much of what he says.
Derrick Rose thinks his team is on par with the Golden State Warriors. Derrick Rose, of all people, thinks the Knicks. When's the last time the Knicks made the playoffs?
Yeah, he just has a high confidence level. So when he says that he's a super team or something like that, it's just him being confident. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, Derek, he doesn't say the best things. But I mean, I can't blame him. As to how people feel, I mean, I'm on social media a lot. I'm always looking to see what people are saying about Derrick Rose. And for Chicago fans, it seems like they don't really care anymore about Derrick Rose. And it's kind of sad in a way because of how much he put in to the Chicago Bulls and how much he sacrificed for them. They're not really appreciating what he did. They're more thinking about what could have been for Derrick Rose, because of course the Chicago Bulls really put all their money onto Derrick Rose leading them to the NBA championship and, you know, facing off and winning a title. But of course that didn't happen because Derrick Rose got injured and he never came back the same. And I feel because he never came back the same and his games that he missed, that they just don't remember him as the same player as they once did in his MVP year. I mean, Rose, he's not a bad player, but I feel that Chicago fans, they're really just ready to move on from him. And they're really just kind of going towards Jimmy Butler as that guy, as he's been showing that he's that guy for them. He's consistent and he's been carrying the Bulls right now. And a lot of the problems of Chicago Bulls is just blamed on Derrick Rose. And I think it's unfair that Derrick Rose gets that kind of criticism, that it's all his fault that the Chicago Bulls are in the place that they are in right now. Because I don't feel it's Derrick Rose's fault for getting injured. I mean, it happens, man. It's the game of basketball. People get injured all the time. I mean, it's him being durable and what he can stand with his body. But I mean, they still support him in such a way as they like to see him succeed. But as to where he is as a player, they don't really care as where he ends up or how many points he's averaging, because to them, it's just another player that could have been. And they're only going to see Derrick Rose as the player that could have been, never the player that he was, just the player that could have been. And I think that will say a lot about Chicago in the future.
Is there a specific person or player or coach or maybe somebody in their front office that you can attribute maybe to the reason why Derrick Rose is blamed for a lot of the unsuccessful stints in the playoffs that happened while he was in Chicago? Obviously, you can't blame him for the injuries. I don't think any sane fan in the world, whether you're a Bulls fan or not, can't blame players for the injuries. A lot of people talked about the way he came back from injuries, the way he trained and tried to prepare himself to make returns, and that set a lot of people off. So is there, and even Jimmy Butler, towards the end in that final year, it seemed like there was a lot of butting heads with him and Rose trying to figure out who the face of this franchise really was. Jimmy trying to take that reign and that role, and Derrick Rose still trying to hold on to it. And in a lot of ways, I felt like Jimmy Butler kind of pushed Derrick Rose out the door, whether it was intentional or not. I feel like a lot of fans grabbed onto Jimmy Butler because he was that guy that was healthy and performing at a high level, is where Derrick Rose was still recovering from these injuries. And people kind of felt like he was wearing out his welcome, which is a little bit ridiculous, but you can see why it happened because of what maybe Butler did towards the end of the last season. So is there somebody that you would attribute this blame, or is it just kind of collectively all around people used him as a scapegoat?
I think it's just everybody using him as that scapegoat. I think the Chicago Bulls, they really just invested everything into Derrick Rose. That was their hope. That was their future. It was a person that had limitless potential. He could have been one of the greats. And now there's questions about him. Will he even make the Hall of Fame? I mean, he's went from MVP to maybe this guy needs to go to D-League, or maybe this guy should come off the bench. And it's just sad to see, man. I don't think that anybody could put that kind of blame on him. And it's just that way that how Derrick Rose was that guy for the Chicago Bulls and couldn't hold up for them. It's just that way to blame him and get away from that as an excuse as to why the Chicago Bulls are struggling now. It's not Derrick Rose's fault. It's definitely not. And as to why Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose couldn't work, Derrick Rose is an offensive-minded point guard. When he comes into the game, he has more of a score-first kind of mentality. So as for Jimmy Butler, he always wants the ball in his hands more, and it just wouldn't work out between getting two players that want the ball in their hands to work and create their own offense. And I think that's why they kind of butted heads as to who's doing what and who's the face and why Jimmy Butler kind of pushed them out. Because, of course, Jimmy Butler is more durable. And Jimmy Butler is kind of showing his true potential now as to where Derrick Rose is trying to get back to the form that he once was. And I think that's why Chicago took their bet with Jimmy Butler and let Derrick Rose go. But it's just no good excuse to use Derrick Rose as that scapegoat, because it really isn't his fault as to why the Chicago Bulls are where they are now.
Do you have a favorite Derrick Rose moment while he's with the Bulls?
Oh, yeah, I have tons of favorite
What's
Derrick
the
Rose
one that
moments.
You could specifically point out, maybe talking about it with your friends, the first thing that pops into your mind when you think about him, what's maybe a defining moment that he was with the Bulls? I know I have one. What's yours?
I think the moment that really made me respect and like Derrick Rose is the year before he won MVP, when he was asked if he could win MVP, and he gave that famous quote saying, "Why not? Why can't I win MVP? You know, why can't I be in the best in the league? I don't see why."
Hey, Derrick, in the back, you won the Rookie of the Year award. You made your first All-Star team a year ago. Now people around the league are talking about you taking the next jump to becoming a top 10 player in the league. I know you've never been one to back away from a challenge. What kind of expectations do you set for yourself individually going into year three?
It's high. The way I look at it within myself, why not? Why can't I be the MVP of the league? Why can't I be the best player in the league? I don't see why. Why? Why can't I do that? I think I work hard. I think I dedicate myself to the game and sacrifice a lot of things at a young age. And I know that if I continue to, like, do good, like, what I can get out of it. And if that's me going now or doing whatever, I'm willing to do it because I know that in the long run, it's going to help me.
And then the next year, he goes on and wins MVP, and he carried the Bulls from, I think it was a 41 record, if I'm sure, into the first seed. And just from that, I just gained a lot of respect for him. I mean, he literally had all the confidence, and he just really went out, worked hard, and balled out. And he really just accomplished all of his goals. And that made me respect him as a player and respect just everything that he does on the court to make himself the player that he was back then.
My favorite moment, I think, in the Derrick Rose era, besides just watching him in his MVP year, had to be when he came back from his injury and they were playing the Cavs in the 2015 playoffs. I believe it was the Eastern Conference semifinals. He 7 seconds left. You know the call. The call's famous now. I retweeted it on Twitter. He comes off a pick at the top of the points and drains and banks the game-winning three to put the Bulls up 2-1.
Dunleavy looking. Finds Rose. Rose trying to get open. Fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer! It still is a madhouse on Madison as Derrick Rose nails the three. And the Bulls take a 2-1 lead in this Eastern Conference semifinal.
That series, I think that's my favorite moment, and I still watch that clip all the time. There's a bunch of them that float around too. People from the media who did it in slow motion still gives me goosebumps every time I watch that. But to me, that was a point in watching the Bulls and being a Bulls fan that I was like, man, that's the spark. That's the one moment that I think Bulls fans were hoping that Derrick Rose could continue bring back. Success and I guess hope for the Bulls altogether. Obviously, the Bulls fell out in that playoff series, but still, I think that was one of my favorite moments. It's actually funny because your picture on Skype is from that shot. I love that picture. I love that the memes and the everything that's been made on Twitter from him from that shot has been great. So I think that's been my most defining moment for Derrick Rose, and probably one of my favorites without a doubt, top three favorite memories from him. The final thing I want to say about Derrick Rose, as far as with the Bulls and everything going on with his injury, obviously, I hope he comes back stronger and better, is able to stay around the game. He's going to be 29 at the start of the next year's season. It'll be interesting to see where he goes, what team he ends up on, some of the business decisions that he decides to make. And this is going to probably be a really important summer for him as far as rehabbing and returning to the form that maybe you said that he could be in, the places that he can go in this kind of second leg of his career. But Derrick Rose, to a lot of fans here in Chicago, I felt like is still an icon. And the one thing I think a lot of players that get a bad rap here that try to lead the Bulls to success is following in those footsteps of the great MJ. And it people will make a big scene about it, though. People in the national media will be like, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, players don't think about that, but they really do, because if you think about it, Bulls fans that are still alive today, and a lot of Bulls fans were alive during that 90s run of them, all those championships, and people still hold players in the front office and the coaching staff to that type of standard. And when things don't pan out and you succeed early in your career, I think that's where Derrick Rose got a lot of his bad rap. But I want to transition to one of the trades that the Bulls made this season, and I think it's almost laughable what they've been doing with him. But Gar Foreman trading for Cameron Payne at near the deadline this year, traded away Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, second round pick. They got Joffrey Laverne and Cameron Payne. Cameron Payne going up and down from the D League this year. Is this one of the worst trades in Garpack's history? And I know there's probably three or four that you can think of off the top of your head that are bad. But him going up and down from the D League after being a guy that they thought was going to play more, and they talked about after they traded for him that he was going to be a guy that's going to get consistent minutes. Him getting sent up and down from the D League, what do you make of that?
I don't think it was a bad trade. I think, we always needed some dancing on the bench.
No.
I think Chicago Bulls was probably last place in dancing. And I think with Cameron Payne bringing some couple dabs to the bench, I think that's great. But as for a basketball player, not really that much of a great trade. He's up and down with the D League. I've actually seen him play before in the D League there time to time, and he's pretty good. He seems like a really good player in the D League. But then when you transition to the Chicago Bulls, it's like he doesn't bring that same level of energy to the court. I mean, he seems to be a good 3-and-D kind of guy, even though his defense hasn't shown too much right now. But he has somewhat of potential. I believe that. I believe that he has somewhat potential. And I believe that Russell Westbrook a little bit was kind of holding him back from developing into a better player. But for right now, I just don't believe the Chicago Bulls got what they were looking for as in a point guard. I don't think Cameron Payne is that guy they were looking for right now. Maybe a couple years down the road, I guess maybe if Cameron Payne can develop a little more, maybe Chicago Bulls could have got what they had, what they wanted. But for now, it just seems like Chicago Bulls kind of rushed to see, is this guy going to be a great player? And he's basically not showing any sign that, you know, he's going to be that guy. They wanted that steal, you know, since they got Jimmy Butler in the draft. And they're like, oh, look, we got this steal in the draft. And they're going to try to be like that as well with Cameron Payne. But Cameron Payne is just not showing signs of being at least a somewhat decent player right now. I think he needs more time in the D League, of course, to develop. I think, obviously, under Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, he will learn a bit more and he'll work on his game and develop. I just don't feel that right now he's the player that the Bulls need. And I think he needs a lot more time to develop before he can make his serious debut as a starter for the Bulls.
I didn't think there was a trade that could have even come close to the trade that Gar Foreman and John Paxson made when they sent LaMarcus Aldridge to Portland for Tyrus Thomas.
Oh,
and I
man.
Feel like a lot of people forget about that trade, and that's the one I hold on to as the absolute worst. One of the worst, even at the time when they did that, made that trade, I said, this is an awful mistake. Tyrus Thomas being the hothead that he was, and he was an athletic freak, but it just didn't translate the way the Bulls wanted to in the NBA. Now you look with what LaMarcus Aldridge is as a player in the NBA and how that could have translated in everything that all the scenarios, the what ifs, the what could have beens. But this trade, this one blows my mind. It involves guys that were potentially role players. It involves Taj Gibson, who is a phenomenal player for the Bulls. I loved Taj when he was here. But it also involved Doug McDermott, a guy that the Bulls traded 2 first-round picks to move up for at draft night. And they invested a lot in this guy. And then they just flipped him for Cameron Payne and Joffrey LeVern. And then the Bulls front office had they had the cojones to go on national radio, to go on Chicago radio and talk about how this was a win for the team, and them sending him up and down the D League and him not performing at the level that they thought it was, or even giving him a chance to be on the floor and show the Bulls what he has. It seems like Fred Hoiberg uses him for 3 or 4 games. He gets sent down for a little bit, comes back, plays 1 or 2 games, gets sent down again. I mean, I think he's been sent up and down 4 or 5 times this month alone. He's only 22. I'll give him that. I still think it might be too early to tell, but I still think Doug McDermott's going to be a phenomenal player in the NBA as far as a role player. And I think it's somebody the Bulls could have desperately used. But I don't know. That's, to me, the front office has made a lot of questionable moves over the last 24 months and maybe even beyond that. So this one, I think, sits at number 2 at the worst trades the Bulls have ever made for me. Unless Cameron Payne turns out to be this starting point guard of the future, it doesn't really correlate, and it looks terrible. Because you look at the guys that the Bulls traded when they traded up for Doug McDermott. Nurkic, who's now with Portland, doing phenomenal. Gary Harris, who's been a good shooter. Those two guys, I feel like, would have worked better for the Bulls. But hey, that's just me. Last thing I want to talk to you about before I let you go, LaVar Ball. I don't know what your stance is on LaVar Ball, but everybody seems to have a stance on LaVar Ball, and I'm somebody who has a stance on LaVar Ball, and I gotta say, even as much as I dislike the guy, I've watched every interview he's done on national TV. I've listened to him on the radio, and for some reason, it's like he just keeps sucking me in with the nonsense that he says. What's your stance on LaVar Ball, especially when he came out and said he can beat MJ one-on-one? Obviously, ridiculous.
We talk about the GOAT here, the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan, and you running your mouth talking about you're going to beat him one-on-one. Why would you say something so blasphemous?
In my heyday, blasphemous. He would need help.
Really?
He's too small. His name is big, and y'all like, it was a 5-on-5 game. He good. One-on-one, I'm undefeated. Never lost. How are you going to beat me?
You know what? It's good.
I got to hear how you going to beat me.
Pick your poison.
How's he going to beat me?
Why are you saying stuff like
this? Tell me how he's going to beat me.
Why are you doing this? Why are you? Is this another marketing tool of yours?
Check this out.
What?
Everybody used to say, who's the best? Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best? Who did you think was the best?
Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now? Who's better? LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Ain't nobody think about no Dan LeVar.
Yes, they are. Look at you. Who we talking about?
Ain't think about no LeVar. LeVar? Are you good? Lonzo, yes. Not LeVar.
Lonzo don't want to see me. I'm too big, too strong.
Where do you sit with LeVar Ball as far as this marketing tirade that he's been going on?
Well, listen, I think that LaVar Ball is one of the best businessmen out there, and you could take a couple notes from this man and learn from it. LaVar Ball is obviously taking his controversial statement. I mean, he's getting a lot of attention from his son, Lonzo Ball, and of course, LaMelo and LiAngelo, and he's getting that attention, and he's using it to say some controversial things to get people talking. And of course, he said something like he could beat MJ one-on-one, and LaVar Ball was what? Averaging 2 points and 2 rebounds in college, which isn't really a great, kind of outlook on how that would play out. But LaVar Ball, he's great at, you know, motivating his sons to be a great player. LaVar Ball, he isn't a bad dad. Everybody's trying to criticize him about, oh, you're saying this about, you know, Lonzo Ball, he's better than Steph Curry, and you're saying this about you could beat Michael Jordan. It's just crazy controversial statements, but people are getting more attention to Lonzo Ball. They're watching him more closely now. They want to see the player that he could develop in, and LaVar Ball, I mean, he says some crazy stuff, and I think sometimes it would be better if he just, shut his mouth, but he is getting attention from scouts. He is getting attention from a bunch of NBA players, and now everybody's just wondering, you know, what kind of player could Lonzo Ball be, and is he gonna live up to this hype that LaVar Ball is giving him and all that?
Could you stand LeVar Ball if he was somehow, some way, one of the balls ends up on in Chicago in the future? Could you stand this guy being around the media or like being around the team? Could you stand his presence in having to listen to every single story? Because I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how UCLA fans did it this season. It seems like everything that was talked about in association with UCLA was either LeVar Ball or Steve Alford leaving. So, and LeVar Ball took over most of that presence. But could people, do you think he's a character people can come to grow to like? Because you know what I've got to say, as he's moved on, the more interviews he's done, and if you actually sit down and listen to the things he says, I think he you're right. He is a genius as far as marketing his sons, but I think he's also somebody who is very intelligent about the things he is saying. And he's not, he brags about certain things and he says these ridiculous things, but he doesn't brag about himself. You know what I mean? Maybe, yeah, saying he can beat MJ, but in another light, people said, oh yeah, he only scored 2.2 points per game in college. Well, I went back and looked at his stats. He actually played at a junior college before he played at Washington. He averaged 16.1 points per game. Cal State Bakersfield, some community, I don't know what it was, community college, Bakersfield, something in California. Anyway, I looked at his stats. It was 16.1 points per game. To me, do you think he's going to wear out his welcome in the NBA? Do you think he's putting unnecessary pressure on his sons? And if he is, do you think he'll lay off of that if his son does somehow end up struggling in the NBA early?
Well, first of all, I know MJ would let some guy from community college drop more than 2 points on him. It doesn't matter how much, you could be averaging 30 points in community college, MJ will still lock you down and have you scoring zero. But as to where he would be, as let's say if Lonzo Ball came to the Chicago Bulls by some random chance, I think it would be just, he's more of a comedic relief. I don't think he's anything more than that. He knows what he's talking about, and he has a lot of confidence in his son, and he will reassure you that his son is that player, that he can be that next big guy for your team, and that's kind of what he's aiming for as to what Lonzo Ball could be. He is putting a little bit of pressure on him as to saying he's better than this player and that player, but I don't think it's that bad to put that kind of mentality for your sons. I mean, of course, you can't be better than Jordan in a lot of people's eyes, but if you feel like you could be better than Jordan, if you think that, you know, my dad always told me I could be better than Jordan, you're probably going to play at a much higher level than most guys trying to prove yourself. And LeVar Ball, I mean, he says really controversial things. So I think in the NBA, he's going to have to learn to say not so much, because it could hurt his son instead of helping him. It's less of a business thing. Once you get to the NBA, it's more of, you know, professionalism. And I think if LeVar Ball can contain himself from, you know, all the outrageous claims and, you know, his son is better than this guy or that guy, I think he could be a great person to speak for Lonzo. But I just don't feel that, you know, he could be trusted in a room alone with reporters to talk about Lonzo Ball. I feel like he might say something that would be too controversial and might have teams thinking like, we can't have this around our locker room.
You know for a fact ESPN's going to have somebody that they're going to hire that's specifically going to cover LeVar Ball related stories. Oh, of course. If not, they already have that. But Rajon, this has been a great conversation, and I want to thank you. Give me your one Bulls hot take going into the playoffs, or maybe even going into the summer. What's a hot take that you've got for the Bulls coming up, whether it's the playoffs, whether it's free agency, draft night? Give me a hot take.
I believe that when Dwayne Wade comes back for the Chicago Bulls in the playoffs, I don't believe he's going to be much of a factor for the Bulls. I believe it's going to be the Jimmy Butler and Rajon Rondo show. And I believe that it's because Rajon Rondo still wants to prove that he belongs in the NBA, because there were some concerns about him. You know, a couple months ago, they were considering cutting him from the team. And now, look, his confidence level is rising. He's shooting much better from the three. He's looking to spread the ball around more. He's scoring more. I think he had a season high 25 last game. Or is it 29? I think it was 25. And I think that him and Jimmy Butler might push out a first round considering who they're playing. If it's the Cavs, I doubt it. If it's someone like the Raptors or another team like that, then I think the Bulls could push out the first round. But after that, I don't think they'll make it too far.
Rajon, where can people read your work? Where can they hear you, read you, follow you? Give us a place where they can see all of your stuff.
Well, basically follow me on Twitter. That's where I'm always at. I'm very active on my Twitter, at Rajon Johnson NBA. You can find my stuff at Chai Bulls Live, at Chai Bulls Live, and Bulls Nation Net, at Bulls Nation Net. And you can find also my stuff at Fansided, the Raptors Rapture blog, where I talk about the Toronto Raptors time to time because it is my hometown team. And you could find mostly some of my stuff on my Facebook page as well, where I post all of my articles that I've written. And yeah, just stay up to date with everything.
But Rajon, thank you again for the time. I appreciate it. But that's going to be it for the Debatables podcast. You can follow us at Debatables on Twitter, almightyballer.com for the podcast. All the podcasts 24/7 is going to be Straight Basketball on Dash Radio, a really exciting app coming out. Download it on iTunes. So we'll be there on Thursday mornings, all episodes archived at almightyballer.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley. But for the Debatables podcast, our guest Rajon Johnson and Jordan Malley, I'm out. Deuces.
Guess what the story is now? Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
I ain't think about no damn LeVar.
Yes, they are. Look at you.